Welcome to this 17th edition of the Becoming Human in the Cosmos podcast, based on the book of the same title on Amazon. This podcast will center on the 8th chapter, the second part, titled Becoming Feminine in the Cosmos. As we, especially women, before we came to mortality, looked on at Eve as she contemplated the fruit offered her by the snake, Carter says, I believe also that it was just and proper that women open the door. Surely, when we considered all the elements of the plan of Christ, and we considered what would befall us in the fallen world, surely the daughters of God were given at least an inkling of what would befall them, rape, forced marriage, sex trafficking, treated as chattel throughout much of human history. If no woman was willing to open the door to mortal life and all that it would mean for women, I don't think it would have ever been opened, and that would only be just. End quote. Eve was not the worst among women. Eve was the best among women. She was the most courageous, the most full of faith. Jesus' performance of the atonement repaid Mother Eve's faith in the plan. Her courageous opening of the door, represented by the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Sisters, are the rewards worth the problems? Balance, rape, forced marriage, sex trafficking, treated as chattel, and I might add incest and abuse to that list, with bringing God's Spirit sons and daughters to mortal life through birth, and nurturing and loving them and watching them grow? I'm not female. I'm not going to try and talk you into or out of it one way or the other. This is a question only women can answer for our race. In a later chapter, I will make the case that the only people fully qualified to comment upon and judge the Holocaust are those who went through it, died because of it, and have now seen it in a perspective from the other side. All the rest of us, even survivors, know only the mortal half of the ordeal. We haven't a complete context to make an informed judgment any more than someone who has seen only the second act of a three-act play, as mentioned in Chapter 1, can comment on the play's outcome. There well may be a surprise ending. Same with women balancing the above, as I have outlined. Only those women who have suffered the extremes of male abuse and also have borne children and nurtured them to adulthood, and now on the other side of mortality, are fully qualified to say, it was worth it, or not. I'm not going to attempt to put words in their mouths, no matter how much I'd like to hear those words. We'll just have to wait until we can hear from them. All I can say as a male is there appears to be hidden reservoirs of courage and strength, faith, a rock-solid conviction to the forward progress, and not just yourselves, but the human race within the soul of femininity. I, as are we all, was born of a woman, a very good woman. Had Mother Eve and my mother not made those difficult choices, I wouldn't be here. Thank you, both of you, from the bottom of my heart, and to my wife, the mother of my four children, and the mothers of my grandkids, my daughter Sarah and daughter-in-law Jennifer. It goes on and on. Again, Hugh Nibley, quote, so who was the more important? Eve is the first on the scene, not Adam, who woke up only long enough to turn over to fall asleep again, the rib and creation scene. And then when he really woke up, he saw the woman standing there ahead of him, waiting for him. What could he assume but that she had set it all up? She must be the mother of all living. In all that follows, she takes the initiative, pursuing the search for ever greater light and knowledge, while Adam cautiously holds back. Who was the wiser for that? The first daring step had to be taken, and if in her enthusiasm she let herself be tricked by the persuasive talk of a kindly brother, it was no fault of hers, the snake and the apple. Still, it was an act of disobedience for which someone had to pay, and she accepted the responsibility. And had she been so foolish? It is she who perceives and points out to Adam that they have done the right thing after all. Sorrow, yes, but she is willing to pass through it for the sake of knowledge, knowledge of good and evil that will provide the test and the victory for working out their salvation as God intends. It is better this way than the old way. She is the progressive one. End quote. Old Testament-related studies previously cited, page 92. On the assumption that men are created in the image and likeness of God the Father, then we may assume that Eve and all womankind are in the image and likeness of our Heavenly Mother. We are on thin theological ice when we degrade females as inferior to males. They all are daughters of God and have attributes and potentialities way beyond what society has given them credit for. In Genesis 3 and 20, Adam refers to Eve as the mother of all living. In the temple, Where Heaven Meets Earth by Truman Madsen and Patricia Holland, Patricia Holland elaborates on this mother of all living description of Eve. Quote, it would appear that her motherhood preceded her maternity. Mother is one of those very carefully chosen words. It is a statement about our nature, not a headcount of our children. Eve, and by implication all females, is the life of those around her, her husband most of all. Woman innately has power to enliven, quicken, nourish, and magnify all these lives. Quote, a woman was the first to taste death and the first to witness resurrected life. That is no coincidence. It is a lasting testimony of God's trust in woman. Pages 49 through 50. I think our eternal roles are as servants. In worldly terms, this is demeaning, but we know from celestial perspectives it is ennobling. Quote, let he who is greatest among you be your servant, said Christ to his apostles. Christ, the greatest among all of us, was the greatest servant the human race has ever had, giving us this mortal life, at least this world, and the atonement necessary to help us square accounts with deity from the inevitable mistakes we make as we learn to grow to spiritual adulthood. I think, therefore, that males and females can be grouped into two classes of servants, servants of life and servants of life, the former females, the latter males. Note, there is no master-servant relationship. All are servants, unless one wants to consider the nebulous and ill-defined entity of life as a master. I don't think it is, though giving others and hiring and firing those whom it thinks will serve it best. But it is a force, a flow, and we either go along with it and get the most from the ride, or if we find ourselves fighting against it, then we have no relevant or workable future or part in the cosmos. Life is. Or can we use the word potential to be a synonym for life? In any event, it has always been, always will be, a mindless force, an unintelligent flow? I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Again, Alan Watts, The Universe Humans as the Rosebush Blossoms, previously cited. That's about the best description of this phenomenon that I can come up with. And life is wonderful. I am getting to the point in my life where I can enjoy the enjoyment that other life forms have in their existence. I saw a movie recently where dolphins were swimming and leaping out of the water and following each other through undersea rock formations and such like. Of course, the permanent smile on the face of each of these animals automatically makes us think they're happy, but I bet they are. As God created all life forms, He set them up so each could have joy in its creation and posterity. If anyone gets what life is, it is God, and I'm sure He has His joy in His creations as His creations find joy in their creation. A while ago, I saw a YouTube video on some people who had rescued a whale entangled in a fishing net. The whale was nearly dead from exhaustion, and it took nearly an hour of cutting and pulling to get the creature free. But when it caught its breath, it spent an hour doing flips, tail splashes, flipper splashes, and leaps from the water. One can only think it was the whale's way of saying, "Thanks for saving my life." I wept for the joy of the animal and its rescuers. And describing men as servants of servants, does that put us in an inferior or subordinate place to women? Did Christ's service to us make him inferior to us? And not to be understood that our assistance to the mothers, wives, and daughters in our lives makes us male superior, as Christ is to us either. No, there is no superior or inferior here. Females have their eternal stewardship, focusing primarily, but not exclusively, on the fostering of new life. Males have theirs of making sure it's as easy a task as possible for the females in their lives by providing for them and, yes guys, helping out around the house so things don't get overwhelming for your mate. On these occasions, when my wife gave birth, the ultimate service to life, I was her servant, holding her hand, encouraging her with kisses and words, getting her sips of ice water. As these three little lives unfolded and grew to become my children, I like to think I further helped out. Now, I said earlier we had four children. We did. Our first child was adopted. Change the occasional diaper, guys. Do some vacuuming. Take a kid to a soccer game. As my dad taught me, look around and see where you can help your mom. Don't let her have the whole load on herself. Rare in my time, my mom worked outside the home and didn't have as much time as needed to take care of our huge home. I grew up in a three-story plus full basement, 21-room mansion in Portland, Oregon. We weren't rich. It was a working home with music and art studios and leftover rooms rented out. But anyway, genteel poverty might be the best description. No, life is messy. It requires much maintenance, cleaning, feeding, training, tending, watching, educating, chauffeuring, and tolerating. Ask any mother. A woman, as a mother of all living, is on the front line of the push to increase life throughout the universe. And as Patricia Holland states above, that mother of all living is a statement about feminine nature, not just a headcount of her children. And from that, what then does mother of all living mean? I think we've pretty much set the boundaries in our discussion above. Women are the stewards of all life around them, their families, the potted plants in the house that they water and repot when needed, the dogs and cats that need to be fed because the kids who promised to do that work don't do it, not to mention the gerbils, hamsters, goldfish, and canaries. Black Elk Speaks, a book about an Oglala Sioux holy man, gives us a Native American look at the male-female relationship, pages 213 through 215. Quote, "For out of the woman the people grows. The faces of the virgins were painted yellow, the color of the south, the source of life. Upon the backs of men the nation is carried, for behind the woman's power of life is hidden the power of men. The woman is the life of the flowering tree, but the man must feed and care for it, for the power of the man encircles and protects the power of the woman. No inferior, superior, subordinate relationships here. Each has their part in the life of the tribe." Angie Fenimore, previously cited, page 141, also elaborates on the differing male and female roles. Quote, "I was told that as a woman, I was half of a whole entity. It is the union of a man and a woman that gives us procreative power, which is the most godlike power that we are allowed to assume as mortal beings. I was told that my husband and I are of equal importance in that union, but that we have different roles to perform." End quote. As to men, she concludes, quote, "God gave men certain powers not so that they could be rulers or tyrants, but rather to teach them about sacrifice and responsibility. Service, not rank and privilege, is God's intention for men," page 142. "That service is, I think, to make the best conditions possible for the female in our life to conceive, bear, and nurture children. As mentioned earlier, Alan Watts stated, the universe humans as the rosebush blossoms. For the universe, cosmos, to human, we have to come together as couples and make homes and families. When John Adams was participating in the writing of our Declaration of Independence, his wife Abigail advised him on including women. quote, "I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion, and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. Why, then, not put it out of the power of the vicious and the lawless to use us with cruelty and indignity and impunity? Men of sense in all ages abhor those customs which treat us only as the vassals of your sex. Regard us, then, as beings placed by Providence under your protection, and in imitation of the Supreme Being, make use of that power only for our happiness." Letters from Abigail to John Adams. I remember hearing, and sorry, there's no direct attribution for this quote, that a younger woman was complaining, justifiably, I'm sure, to an older woman about the unfairness men inflict on women. Yes, it happens. The older woman listened, then asked, quote, "If you had to choose between influence and power, which would you choose?" The younger woman thought, then answered, "Influence." The older woman answered, "That's the choice you made in the premortal existence. That's why you're female." We see that operating in the above example of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, with Eve influencing Adam to get with the program. Men may have the power, but women are capable of great influence on us, and I think that's a critical gift that is overlooked and underused. In My Big Fat Greek Wedding, the daughter is complaining to her mother that her father is abusing his authority as head of the family in not letting her go to college. She resents his position as head of the house. Mom settles her with the observation that, yes, the man is the head of the house, but woman is the neck, and she can turn that head any which way she wants. Those who have seen this delightful film know mom is able to influence her husband for a reversal of decision, and their daughter winds up in college where she meets the man she marries. Men should be influenced by women for good. That's how it was with Adam and Eve. The world is in bad shape and getting worse. I think if it is to be saved, it must be through the influence of women on men. Muslim women must say to the men that the bloodshed is enough. They're tired of bringing babies into the world, only to have them reared up to be cannon fodder generation after generation. As I write this segment, June 16th, 2007, there are three Muslim versus Muslim conflicts raging. Fatah versus Hamas in Palestine, violence in the refugee camps in Lebanon, and Shiite versus Sunni in Iraq. The men don't have the sense to stop the violence. It must be initiated through the influence of women. Jordan Peterson, previously cited, writes, "But the capacity of women to shame men and render them self-conscious is still a primal force of nature." Page 48. I've often marveled at how God has devoted 50% of his resources to the direct expansion of life. 50% of all creatures are female, with some minor exceptions of lesser life forms. Would God have devoted such overwhelming resources to something that he didn't consider important? Not to be too Star Wars-ish about this, but I think life is a force, that great sea of potential, clamoring to be embodied and gain their individuality, and the perfected humans, i.e. God's response to it, is to have half of all his resources devoted directly to bringing in new life. And for the higher life forms anyway, a training and growing period wherein the young are brought up to handle adult responsibilities. A mother polar bear emerging from her den when the Arctic spring rolls around has the duty to teach her cubs to hunt seal, and she also has the job of feeding them with her milk until they can hunt for themselves, a responsibility that greatly taxes her body and resources. And as animals get higher up the evolutionary chain, the dependent childhood status increases. Gorillas and chimps take care of their young, I think, for 3 to 4 years. Human mothers take care of their young for upwards of 20 years, with obvious lessening degrees of involvement. I think what we see of femininity here is just the iceberg's tip. We're aware of only about 10% of what femininity truly is and involves. I think women don't come into their full female maturity here, though they are being trained and schooled for eternal roles that only a female personality can fulfill. This life is not only probationary, it is preparatory. In this man's world, women have to develop wisdom and wiles to survive and achieve at least a modicum of their potentials. There is much yet to be realized in them as the eternities unfold. I wish I could spell it out, but I can't. I just believe that's the direction in which women, and ultimately the human race, are headed. In that talk given at the FAIR conference earlier, Valerie Hudson Carter details the role and importance of Eve. She says, quote, "I stay in the church because I am a feminist. God means an exalted woman and an exalted man married. There is no God without men and women loving each other as equals. You will have your male or female body forever. The life of being a woman married to my sweetheart and having children forever is the life that will bring me the fullest joy." End quote. Many women currently locked in abusive relationships or a marriage where they aren't treated and loved as equals, where the husband has no clue as to the eternal importance and role of his partner, might not think of this as heaven. The only thing I can say, sisters, is that the great majority of us men have a lot of unlearning and repenting to do if we hope to make it to the highest realms with our lives. I would also observe that it is a principle of biology that when any creature has a large investment in a certain bodily attribute, that attribute must pay off or it is a waste. For example, an elephant's trunk. A lot of energy and body tissue goes into making a trunk, plus the areas of the brain that deal with controlling it and obtaining its input. But the elephant gets much use of it, eating, picking things up, drinking, giving himself a bath, smelling, and even using it as a communications device with other elephants. All the investment the animal puts into his trunk pays off. Now, consider the investment females put into reproduction compared to males. If we were to weigh the reproductive organs and their auxiliaries of the two sexes and compare total body weights to the weight of these organs and put them into a ratio, we'd find, I'm sure, that the female has an enormously greater investment in reproduction than the male. Consider the weight combined of breasts, womb, uterus, cervix, vagina, ovaries, plus the extra layer of fat on the buttocks to provide nourishment for the fetus, plus extra calcium in the hips. Compare that with the prostate, penis, which gets double use in the man, plus the testicles, and that's it for the guys. Just off the top of my head, I'd guess women invest about 5% of their total body weight purely for reproduction. I'd be surprised if men invest more than 0.1%. If these physiological investments translated into open aggression, we poor males would be cowering in trees and behind rocks, exhausted from the overwhelming demands of reproduction-oriented females. Yeah, guys, you think it would be fun, but we're talking 24/7 here. You gotta have some time off to go fishing. My personal opinion is, though, that this drive isn't absent. It's just sublimated. A subconscious drive that motivates much of feminine actions. I think it's the most powerful drive in the cosmos. More proof? Okay. The proof, by the way, is in quotation marks. Take 1,000 males at random off the street and 1,000 females. Of the two groups, which is showing more body? Females, obviously. For example, fashion. Fashions come and go. Low-cut necklines, short skirts, sleeveless or backless blouses. And even that which is covered is usually covered in form-fitting clothing. Why do women seem much more anxious to show off their bodies than men? Not that I, as a red-blooded heterosexual male, am complaining, mind you. Women know consciously or subconsciously that men are attracted by sight, as shallow creatures that we are. Therefore, they need to display at least some of their femininity to draw our interest. It is the nature built into the female body that draws our attention to the need to reproduce. There are countless billions of spirits waiting for mortal bodies up in the premortal existence. Let's get with it, nature is constantly screaming at us. Now, this is not to excuse promiscuity, just to make us aware that powerful forces need to be kept in mind and countered if we are to use this gift wisely and for the benefit of all involved. Remember, as shown above, that it was Eve's drive to have children, even at the risk of death, that kicked the human experience, at least from the Garden of Eden point of view, off of dead center and got things up and running. Betty Eady, previously cited, adds, quote, I also understood the peril women faced from Satan. I saw that he would use the same process of temptation in the world that had been used in the garden. He would attack women through their restlessness, using the strength of their emotions, the same emotions that gave Eve power to move when Adam was too satisfied with his situation. I was told that once Satan had the women, the men would easily follow. End quote. Page 110. Eady continues by stating that women, because of their emotional structure, are more responsive to love and can therefore be more in touch with the Spirit of God. Their roles as mothers give them a special relationship with God as creators. Previously cited, page 110. This, with great risk assumed at being labeled sexist, is one of the greater differences between men and women. Women have their major roles assigned to them by the body they have, which is designed for conceiving, bearing, and nurturing babies. I don't mean this to be a chicken and egg debate. The female body is given the female spirit to accommodate her eternal nature role, female spirit and nature first, followed by body. Now, let me emphatically stress, women can do more, much more, than just make babies. And any woman who does only that is most likely ignoring other God-given talents. It's just that females have a primary calling and focus, males don't, and must find theirs or be frustrated. Consider this statement, quote, we have sisters here who, if they had the privilege of studying, would make just as good mathematicians or accountants as any man, and we think they ought to have the privilege to study these branches of knowledge, that they may develop the powers with which they are endowed. We believe that women are useful not only to sweep houses, wash dishes, make beds, and raise babies, but that they should stand behind the counter, study law or physics, medicine, or become good bookkeepers and be able to do the business in any counting house, and this to enlarge their sphere of usefulness for the benefit of society at large. Okay, feminists, who do you suppose made that statement? Mormon prophet and polygamist Brigham Young. Discourses of Brigham Young, pages 216 through 217. In speculating why historical accomplishments in art, science, and other fields are almost overwhelmingly male, Charles Murray, Human Accomplishment, writes, exceptions exist, but as a rule, the experience of pregnancy and birth appears to be a more profoundly life-altering experience for women than becoming a father is for men. So closely is giving birth linked to the fundamental human goal of giving meaning to one's life that it has been argued that, ultimately, it is not so much that motherhood keeps women from doing great things outside the home as it is men's inability to give birth that forces them to look for substitutes. For every 1,000 workers who drop out of the workforce to stay home with a new baby, how many are mothers? Fathers. I'm willing to bet the number is overwhelmingly female. As Murray further writes, quote, pursuing a career at full throttle as first rank accomplishment demands is at odds with being a full-time mother. In practice, pursuing a career at full throttle often means foregoing motherhood altogether. Pages 286 through 287. When Murray talks of human accomplishment, he means the once-in-a-lifetime genius, not workaday success in which the next generation will know nothing. Quote, "We are not talking merely about motherhood versus career or about juggling jobs and children. When we discuss accomplishments at the level of the people in the inventories, the historical head and shoulders above all the rest of us achievers, we are commonly talking about perfectionist, monomaniacal devotion to a calling that calls for a much more ruthless trade-off than the ones ordinarily required by a job and children. We should not be surprised or dismayed to find that motherhood tempers the all-consuming obsession that great accomplishments in the arts and sciences often requires." Page 288. The generalization is, females, most of them, have their focus, and it's easily the most important focus in the cosmos, bringing in and nurturing new life. Males have to find theirs, and are rather frustrated until they do. Alexander Solzhenitsyn observed the spiritual strength of women during the Soviet persecution of religious believers in the 1920s. In Gulag Archipelago, Volume 1, he writes of how the arrests went in expanding circles. First the priests and nuns, then active laymen, then, quote, "particularly women, who were the most stubborn believers of all, and who for many long years to come would be called nuns in transient prisons and camps. They were arrested not so much for their faith, but for teaching it to their children, which came under the heading of counter-revolutionary action. Occasionally the father would renounce his religion to stay home with the children, while the mother would be sent to the far north for 10 years, and upon release be prohibited from ever returning to her children and her home areas." Pages 37 through 38. He also writes of an old woman imprisoned for helping the Metropolitan of the Orthodox Church escape Soviet persecution and flee to Finland via an underground railroad. For several nights, the might of communist interrogative power tried to bully the information about that underground railroad out of her. Because of her eschatological outlook, they couldn't budge her. "To whom did he go when he left Moscow?" they badgered. "I know, but I won't tell you," she shot back at them. "There is nothing you can do with me, even if you cut me into pieces. I am not afraid of anything. I would be glad to be judged by God right this minute." Gulag Archipelago, Volume 1, page 131. Men, that is the strength, the foundation, heart, and soul of our families. Don't treat your wives as second-class citizens, as inferiors. They are daughters of God with amazing reserves of strength, insight, and courage. Be thankful and glad for them in your lives, without which families would be impossible. Our families, put together here, don't end with death, or at least shouldn't. In Heavenly Answers to Earthly Questions, previously cited, Joyce Brown writes, "It was impressed upon me that heavenly, caring relationships begin on earth and do not end at death. In fact, they are stronger and even more special on the other side. I observed both men and women there, and I was aware that we maintain the same gender as in life. I knew that relationships of family and friends continue, and we will be reunited with our loved ones who have passed on." End quote. Page 143. And thus we conclude this 17th podcast of the series, Becoming Human in the Cosmos, based on the book I have on Amazon. The next podcast will be titled The Cosmos, and will deal with the physical cosmos and its creation. Join me, please, and thanks for tuning in, and special thanks to Craig and Kate Whitmore, my technical personnel, without whom this podcast and my website wouldn't even exist in the cloud as dust particles. Visit our website at hazelleproductions.com. That's HAZELLEPRODUCTIONS.com. Thank you.